We have two guests in this morning, Gillian Fleet and Sharon Hall, who are from Lincolnshire Police, and they're going to be talking to us today about the subject of scams.
Actually, we are here to talk about scams, but what we prefer to call it is fraud, because when we talk about scams, people think that it's something kind of light-hearted, something that wouldn't happen to them. They think they know a lot about scams, but scams are fraud, and fraud is crime,
right.
And we want people to report to us.
So we'll refer to it from now on then as fraud, you know, the crime of fraud. Okay. So what are fraudsters really trying to do then when they sort of contact us and say, hi, you know, I'm from such and such a bank and I'd like you to transfer money into a safe account?
So basically, there's two things that the fraudsters are probably trying to do. Firstly, they're probably trying to get your data because your personal information is absolutely key for them, because they can commit further offences once they have all of that. But more importantly, they're going to be trying to get your money by falsely telling you something has happened when in actual fact it hasn't.
Right.
And they will convince you that something has happened and that you need to act immediately. And it's something we actually call social engineering. So people are socially engineered when they are convinced that they need to act. And the fraudsters are really, really good at that particular technique. So they are very persuasive. Their tactics can be quite, persuasive. And they can become quite threatening as well. So that kind of like makes people react as well. So it's twofold, really. You will respond because you want to protect yourself, you want to protect your money, but more importantly, you're going to respond because you think that you are talking to your bank or you're talking to the police, so therefore you think you are complying with instructions from some sort of law authority, basically.
I've seen some programs on TV about this, and one thing I've noticed is that the person trying to perpetrate the fraud, they try and create a sense of urgency, panic. Is that a typical approach that they take?
Absolutely, because when they can put somebody in that sort of situation, people are more likely to comply with what they are being told. So that sense of urgency, that we need to do something now, you must do it now, you're going to get arrested or you're going to lose all of your money, that will put somebody into panic, and they won't actually start to think about what is actually being said to them. When you're in a panic mode, you are going to react without literally thinking, and sometimes the decisions in that sort of mode the wrong decisions.
Right.
So, and if you're looking at fraud protection side of stuff, if you ever get anything like that around urgency, must do it immediately, there's a good chance that you are about to be a victim of a fraud unless you act.
Okay. And what kind of frauds do you typically find people perpetrating? I mean, I've been subjected to attempts on phone and on text and email. Is that the typical approach?
So basically, there's lots of different types of fraud out there. We could spend an awful long time telling you about all the ones that we know about, and obviously they'll probably be doing new things as well in the background. But essentially, there's only four ways that the fraudsters can make contact with us. So you've already highlighted that, basically. So it's online, through the post, on the telephone, and also on the doorstep. So when you start looking at the different types of scams... I've just said scams. When you start looking at different types of frauds, then basically when you look at fraud protection messages, if you concentrate on how the fraud is likely to be enabled, rather than trying to think what sort of fraud it is, it's much easier to protect yourself.
Okay. So how would you actually recognise that you might be subjected to a fraud? Are there any key elements that sort of might trigger a response that says, this is a bit suspect? Is there anything you should be looking for?
Out of the blue. So if you take the four fraud enablers, we would go through the sort of things to look for. So if we were talking about telephone fraud, which would be landline as well as a mobile phone, because obviously it's got that facility there. Anything that is out of the blue, that is unexpected, and you've already highlighted the sense of urgency and the necessity to act quickly. Those things straight away should be triggers in people's mind to think, hang on a minute, I just need to think about what I'm being told. Because those are the sort of situations that you want ideally to avoid in the first place. So if we were looking at fraud protection side of stuff for the telephone stuff, we would tell people, if you don't recognise the number, don't answer the phone. let the phone go to answer phone. If it's important, the person will leave a message. If you have sort of like caller ID on your phone and you can see who is calling you, don't answer it unless you recognise the number.
Even
if it's a local number, because the fraudsters do have the ability to spoof telephone numbers. So if you're living in the Lincoln area and 01522 came up on your phone, you're more likely to answer it because you think it's a local call.
Right.
So the advice basically is if you don't recognise the number, don't answer it. And the reason why we say don't answer is because we know how good the fraudsters are. Once you've answered that phone, there's a good chance that they may well be able to talk into giving either your details or bank account details. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. Actually, that what you've suggested is generally the plan that I take. If I don't recognise the number, I'll let it go to voicemail. My philosophy being, if it's important, they'll leave you a message.
Absolutely.
If it's not important, it's probably wasn't worth answering the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well, to be aware that if they do leave a message and they say they're from the bank, can you ring me on this number? Mm-hmm. Always check out that number and ring on a number that you know that's trusted.
Right.
So something maybe off your statement or off some paperwork that you have from your banks that you know that you are genuinely ringing the bank.
Right, right. Okay.
So the sort of stuff, kind of like we said, we started off the telephone, online things, so emails that come through, unsuspected emails that you're not completely out of the blue.
Right.
We always tell people that Amazon and HMRC will not send you an email with a link. So if Amazon are emailing you to say there's a rebate or your direct debit has failed, click the link. That is definitely going to be what we call a phishing email.
Right.
And that's the same with HMRC. We always used to advise people that HMRC would never email you, but in actual fact, HMRC do if you have an account with them, but they will never ever tell you to click on the link within that email. If something has happened on your account, they will tell you to log on in the normal way.
Okay.
So it's about recognising if it's got a link attached to it, there's a good chance it's going to be a fraudulent email, basically.
Okay.
So never click on a link, ever.
That actually brings up a point of a friend of mine came down to my apartment in a bit of a panic because he'd received an email purporting to be from Norton Antivirus saying that his account was about to be debited, so I think it was $350 for an annual renewal. And he came down saying, you know, I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah.
And we clicked on the email, the address of the email that was sent to him, and it was some really weird address, and I said no, you know.
And also the monetary amount, dollars.
Yeah.
That would be not to say flags, but that would be another hint
that
basically it's you know, and it's out of the blue.
Yes, totally
basically,
out of the blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like advice there.
Yeah.
So doorstep fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially with those sorts of frauds, you'll have people knocking on your door, saying they're working on a road around the corner, they've got some extra tarmac, they can probably sort out some issues on your driveway.
Right.
Or they might say that they're working on somebody's roof around the corner and they can see your roof, it's got a loose tile, or your chimney's not quite straight.
Right.
Anything like that. And again, it's that sense of urgency that if you don't do something now, then something bad's going to happen within your house.
Right.
So again, they'll convince people to have work done that's either unnecessary, or if payment is made, they might not even come back and do the work at all.
Mm.
Or the work might be carried out, but it might be to such a standard that it's probably worse than what the problem was beforehand, if that makes sense. So again, with those sorts of things, we always tell people, if you're not expecting somebody to come knocking on your door, then essentially, you know, check them out first. Who are they? It's easy to say, don't answer your door at all. But if you have to answer your door, just be really, really careful and literally do not engage with them. And that goes again for sometimes some of the doorstep sellers as well.
They
may say they're from some sort of government scheme or some sort of charity. You can always check charities out properly on the government website to check the charities to make sure that they are registered. But if they're saying they're from some sort of government scheme, then it's unlikely that there's such a government scheme. I'll tell you, there isn't a government scheme that says they can sell dusters, etc. But once they've got you to open the door and they can engage with you, they're really good at what they do.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's some really persuasive
people out
there.
And again, it's all
there?
Social engineering with making you kind of like feel sorry for them or want to help them out. So it's just those sort of, again, things to look for when somebody's standing on your doorstep.
Right.
And then we have the postal stuff. A lot of the postal stuff we get now is probably pretending to be from banks. Mm-hmm. We need to contact you about something. But we don't generally get the sort of postal stuff we used to get in the past, like the old competition winners and stuff like that,
yes,
or the Australian lottery, etc.
Yeah.
They are still about, obviously. Mm. But the main advice around those sorts of things is you've got to be in it to win it. So
right.
if you're not in it, then you are not going to have won it.
No, that's very true.
But generally, those are sort of things we'd look for rather than trying to go through. Mm-hmm. There's this fraud, there's that fraud, etc., etc., etc. So it's mainly about that impersonation, the urgency, monetary value, and data.
Right.
They're the key things.
What would you suggest? I mean, if you were in the middle of a, say, you have answered the telephone, and you suspect as you're getting into the conversation something doesn't sound right here, what should you do?
First action is to say no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Second action is to put the phone down. If you've managed to get the numbers come up, or you can 147 the number, you can actually report those. And I think when we go to the reporting, I can go through that.
Right.
But if you can make a note of the number, that's absolutely fine. So basically, no thank you, phone down.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get the number, make a note of it, but never ever call the number back. Twofold, you might end up speaking to somebody that you don't want to, or you might have rung a premium number, which will then obviously charge you as well.
That's
so
a point.
Never ring them back.
Okay. And, you know, heaven forbid, you think at the end of a conversation or whatever, I think I've been
scammed.
Say scammed.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah, we can cope with that. Yeah.
You're not going to throw me out.
No.
Okay. What should you do if you think, I've fallen for something here, and I think I'm going to find my bank account is going to be rapidly zeroed.
Okay.
What should you do?
Well, the first thing we're going to say here is around the victim shaming and blaming. You haven't fallen for it.
Right.
You've been socially engineered into engaging with whatever the fraud was. So we would never say fallen.
Okay.
If you've given details over that could render you liable to identity fraud, so you give them personal details, address details, or bank account details, whilst you say you might not have had any money stolen, but you have given those details over, that would be the point that we would tell you to report it to Action Fraud. But if you can kind of like look in more general terms, so fraud is vastly underreported. Three reasons why fraud is probably underreported. First reason is you get that scam message, that scam email, I'm using that word on purpose, and you hit the delete button. You haven't reported it. Second reason why people don't report fraud is because they've engaged with it and they've had money stolen and they feel embarrassed because they don't want to tell their friends and family, etc., about it. And then you have the third reason why people don't report, which is probably far more sinister, is because they don't actually realise they're a victim. So when you start looking at victims of investment fraud or romance fraud, then there's a good chance they might not actually know they've been a victim of fraud. So three reasons why people don't report fraud, essentially.
Okay.
If you receive a suspicious text message, or you receive a phishing email or a suspicious telephone call, you can report those quite easily. So suspicious text messages, you could forward them to 7726.
Okay.
And what that does is it tells your phone provider, I've had this suspicious text message. They work with the other phone providers. This is all in layperson's terms, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then basically...
Just making a note of that number for my own use.
But then basically what will happen is the number will be disconnected, so they'll disrupt that telephone number.
Okay.
And you might notice, depending on what sort of phone you've got, if a phone rings and it says suspected scam, that is because people have reported that number.
Okay.
That's the reason why those that come through. Phishing emails need to be reported to report@phishing.gov.uk. Report at phishing.gov.uk. And that is part of the National Cyber Security Centre's website, so the government's website.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they will investigate all those reports of those phishing emails.
Okay.
And if it's been used for a fraudulent purpose, they will take that website down, basically.
Right.
The only time that I would tell people to report their fraud to the police, which is via Action Fraud, will be, as we said right at the start, if you've given details over, personal details, bank account details, and you've had money stolen. That is the point that you report it to the police, which is Action Fraud. If you've got a doorstep seller on your doorstep and you're petrified, that is always going to be a 101 or a 999 call, depending on the circumstances, appropriate.
Right.
So basically, we want to encourage people to report the fraud, but those steps that you would take, hopefully, after this little bit of advice, people will be reporting the text messages, the phishing emails,
right,
and they won't need to report an right actual fraud to the police because of the advice mm-hmm we've kind of like given mm-hmm today, if yeah that makes
yes
sense.
Yes, it does, absolutely. I must admit, I mean, when I've received dubious emails and or texts, I just normally delete them, and to me that's been the end of it.
Yes, mm-hmm, yes.
You know, but there is an advantage then yeah to actually doing something proactive in terms
absolutely
of yeah contacting the yeah people that you've mentioned.
Because you've highlighted that when it comes up on your phone,
right,
suspected scam.
Right.
That's where that comes from, so it is okay really important to report it.
Okay, thank you for that.
I think that the biggest thing we need is for people to talk about fraud. People don't mm-hmm talk about it. And as Sharon said, sometimes if you've been a victim of fraud, you don't want to tell anybody because of that, you know, you feel ashamed about mm it. But the more we talk about it, we can take that away from people so that we can help people. Sharon goes out and does community talks. So
oh,
if there's
okay
any community groups around right that would like a talk, Sharon goes out and gives a fraud prevention chat
okay
to them.
Yeah,
And for people who have been victims, we are here to help them and support them. Mm-hmm. So we have a team of volunteers that go in and help reassure people and build up that resilience so that they know that they're protected
right
again in future. So there are things that we can do yeah to help people.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So any of the listeners then who, you know, either have been subjected to a fraud can contact you. Or another group, for example, you mentioned perhaps a local village community or something
yeah
like that could request a talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, Sharon and Julian, thank you very much indeed for coming in today. I found it very informative, and I'm sure our listeners did too. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
You.